So I'm Peter Van Valkenburg, and I am a lawyer in Washington, D.C. I'm the director of research at Coin Center. Coin Center, among many other things, is suing the U.S. Department of Treasury for their Tornado Cash sanctions. But before we talk, thank you. Before we talk about the law, I want to tell you all a bedtime story. A story about Clearville, the land of glass houses. For as long as anyone could think of, the town of Clearville had only one building material to speak of: glass. Cars made of glass, shops, stores, and halls. Why, even the homes had glass roofs and glass walls. Now, the glass of Clearville was unusually strong, so nobody worried about glass built too long, or breaks, shattered bits, or cuts from the shards. They only did worry about looks from the yards. You see, the town folk of Clearville were very polite. They were watched from morning through night. They were also a little bit dull, an entire town in a creative lull, because people who are always watched seldom do anything worth watching. They're just too afraid to be judged for the things they might be botching. But one day, a stranger came to town in a terrifically tall truck of instant renown. The size of the truck was one for the books, but even stranger was its very new looks. You see, the truck wasn't made of glass, not at all. It was positively opaque, a monstrous wall. And once they got to thinking about it, even more alarming was that because of the truck's sheer opacity, no one could see what might be inside its capacity. They'd soon find out, for the stranger went by the name of Shade, and Shade had just one goal: sell shades and get paid. Curtains, blinds, why, even frosted glass. And sell them he did, right from the truck. He sold his lot to the last. You see, the Clearvillians were pretty darn sick of always looking over their shoulders, even in the relative privacy of their glass people holders. A few said, "Well, I've nothing to hide," but even those folks admitted a curtain or two in the bathroom was good for their pride. Soon, every house in Clearville was positively swathed with shades. And Shade, he didn't only have strange wares to sell, he had some tall tales to tell. He talked of his friends back in the land of unclear. Why, there was paint, wood, and stone, even vinyl veneer. Now, markets, science, and trends, they tend to move faster than the state comprehends, so it was with a shock that the mayor of Clearville awoke one morning to a dark, dark room. "The sun's gone out," he said with a start. "Oh no, it's just the wall that the neighbors have curtained in part." But Mayor Clear's morning was about to get worse. Still not out of bed, he heard Clearvillians chanting in verse. Peeking out of his windows, he saw them outside. They'd come to complain from near, far, and wide, not about shade, but of other intrusions, from the chief of police, Constable I, and his inapt conclusions. It seems I had been bothering them all, banging on doors whenever he'd call. This was something new to the town. It once was the case that I would simply walk by and, well, spy, to be sure there was nothing so sly going on in the houses of Clearville. But now, well, now, he had no way to tell what troubles afoot. All that glass was as see-through as soot. He had particular suspicions about houses 2, 6, and 9, of whose inhabitants there wasn't a sign. Were they in there? How many? And what were they doing? He swore if he listened, he heard improper cooing. Yes, I was near certain that the folks in house 9, behind a red curtain, were paying for favors sublime. "My eye," said Mayor Clear, "I trust you, I do. And forgive me my sneer, but you can't just barge into a house that's suspicious. You've got to have evidence your hunch is propitious." "I've a better plan, sir," I said with a stir.
will simply go raid the truck of that despicable shade. And so to Shade's truck they went. Sorry. To Shade's truck they went to learn of the curtains he lent to houses 9, 6, and 2, to charge him with crimes of the rest of that crew. I just gave them some shade, he said, for the money I made. Just what they might do, even inside of my view, was none of my business or trade. So you saw what they did, and it's that which you hid. What a very fine tale. Now we'll take you to jail, and of this troublesome truck we'll be rid. And that, my friends, is the end of our Clearville charade. Gone was the source of the infamous shade. Pay you no mind to the many loose ends. Like what of the new materials from all of Shade's friends? Should they sell in Clearville? I guess it depends. And what of Clearvillians still fully ensconced in the velvet velour Shade already had launched? Are they allowed to keep drawing those blinds? No, or yes, but only if they've no crimes in their minds. So Clearville is Bitcoin and Ethereum, for it inherited all of the transparency of Bitcoin's blockchain. And the lesson here is that we shouldn't assume that the particular transparency of existing technology is some kind of moral or ethical imperative, rather than a mere technological accident or a temporary limitation. Shade is Tornado Cash, or really its developers. Tornado Cash is the bolts of new fabric that people can put up in their glass houses. And the lesson here is we should not assume that the inventors of incremental improvements are inherently doing something wrong. Nor should we assume that these inventors are one-offs or frauds who can be ignored. In many ways, this technology is inevitable. If not Tornado Cash, then there are countless other projects and potential protocols which will continually improve, bringing privacy, I think, not just to Ethereum, but ultimately to any and all global transactions. Now, there's also an ambiguity in the story. Shade might only be selling curtains, but he might also have installed them. And while installing them, while providing these tools, he might have seen some things in houses 2, 6, and 9. He might have even seen them committing crimes. And so the question here is, at what point is someone doing more than sharing tools for general usage? At what point are they conspiring, criminally perhaps, to further some crime by providing those tools? If they've no personal interaction with those potential criminal users beyond publishing a smart contract and a website that criminals use along with others, are they somehow now culpable for the crimes? If they are not culpable at that point, then are they culpable if they continue to update the software on the website after it becomes apparent that some of the users of the website are committing crimes? So really the question is, when should Shade have stopped installing the curtains? When he noticed some funny business happening in a back room? When he was told explicitly that they wanted the curtains to hide criminal activity? Should he demand identification and criminal background checks before installing curtains in people's houses? And also, what fraction of users should be suspected criminals before the service is deemed a de facto criminal service? And that mere fact is somehow prima facie evidence of a criminal conspiracy for which the developer of the service can be held culpable. So, you know, a very reasonable estimate suggests that SWIFT, the Global International Bank Settlement Network, may facilitate the movement of approximately $800 billion to $2.8 trillion in illicit funds annually. That's a whole hell of a lot more than Tornado Cash, in absolute terms. Now, in relative terms, as far as the share of the illicit fraction's size relative to total flows, it is smaller. And so my question here is simply, should we pick a number? Should we pick a percentage? And finally, Is there something about money and money laundry that makes it different from my parable? We don't obligate home security installers to actively identify and report their customers' crimes to the police. We don't hold the developers of encrypted messaging services responsible for their users' crimes that are discussed on their platforms. At least, we haven't in the past. It may be changing now. Is money somehow special? Why? And what of our story's very unsatisfying ending, the one with all those loose ends? Shade is in jail, his truck was impounded. What good does this do? So even if we arrest and incarcerate all of the inventors of these tools, the tools and ideas, they remain in the world. They can't be uninvented and can only be universally confiscated through extreme tactics and the invasion of many innocent persons' rights. So the question is, can we ever get Clearville back? In this manner, my story is actually far less extreme than reality. It would take only a handful of night raids by the infamous Constable I to pull down all the red curtains and restore the town to its prior transparency. But with digital tools on the internet, well, those tools are infinitely replicable. They can be copied, shared, spread. They can be made immutable. And it's likely a fool's errand to try and forbid anyone from using these privacy tools online. And the other question here is, can we or should we ban the legitimate users of these tools alongside the criminal users? I think not. I think it's important that people remain free to anonymously donate to nonprofits that are advocating for political change. Coin Center accepted a handful of donations through Tornado Cash before the sanctions were announced. I think it's very good that our donors could use that tool to protect their privacy when they were exercising their First Amendment right to assemble and petition the government. I think it's very good that our John Doe co-plaintiff in our lawsuit challenging the sanctions can privately send money to support the defense of Ukraine without immediately drawing the scrutiny of the Russian intelligence services. So if we don't want to just ban the legitimate privacy uses of the tech, what can we do? Can we pre-screen the legitimate uses? Can we filter out the bad? Does that kind of prior restraint scale? Is it fair, constitutional? And who decides which uses are good and which are forbidden? The US government, the European Union, Thailand, Berlin, Bangkok, who? Finally, there's another reason that Tornado Cash matters. And it's this. Even if we disagree about the privacy security balance that we'd like to see in the world, and even if we disagree about how many eggs we'd like to break to get there, there's still a procedural and rule of law question. Who should decide to craft this policy in our system? The courts, presidents, prime ministers, regulators? Should it be elected officials or mere appointees? Because right now, for Roman, that policy was not made clear by the legislature in advance of his arrest. It's being made on the fly by the unelected prosecutors who are interpreting existing laws for money transmission licensing. In fact, their interpretation is antithetical to the interpretation of the federal regulator, FinCEN. And I see a glaring rule of law issue here. And that, perhaps, is the biggest reason why the persecution of the Tornado Cash developers, Alexei and Romans, is unjust. So please support their defense. This is Alexei's defense fund. This is Roman's defense fund. And please support our civil claim to find that the sanctions against Tornado Cash exceed the statutory authority and should be thrown out. In conclusion, I don't want to live in Clearville. I don't think you can force me to live in Clearville if I've not committed other crimes. I don't think you can arrest the people who give me tools for privacy in my entirely legal day-to-day affairs merely because someone else who got the benefit of that privacy wanted to break the law. And even if I have to live in Clearville, I would expect the dignity of there being a public debate amongst my elected officials, a vote, a signature from the president or a prime minister before they pull down my curtains and stare through my walls. Simply claiming that the existing laws already gives them the power to do that is the opposite of law and order. So thank you for listening to my story, and come find me if you want to offer your support.